On ABC Radio,
this is The Big Fish
with Scott Levi.
Ahoy there, welcome aboard another cracking edition of The Big Fish. Last week, we left the Waymaster, Cole Codwalloper Trenneman, on beautiful Glen Line Dam, just over the border, trying to catch a metre plus cod. We'll check in with Cole next to see if his quest has delivered the trophy. Stinker with more on his remarkable rescue and the outpouring of support, and also the great job he's doing in promoting boating safety is really, hopefully, saving people from the same ordeal. And Kendall Kramer from the Coffs Coast has been at the Barra Nats in the all-girl team on the mighty Daly River, dodging huge crocs and giant snags. We'll find out how she went, all coming up on The Big Fish. It's The Big Fish, and last time we left our hero, Codwalloper Cole, at Glen Line Dam. The score was Cod 1, Cole 0. Well, he got walloped all right. A giant cod came up just as his giant soft plastic was emerging from the depths and smashed it off the surface. But what happened then, Cole?
Good morning, folks, and good morning, Scotty. I had this big thump on the line. I missed him. And I was most peeved and come up beside the boat and absolutely tried to choke the lure down. It wasn't a big fish, but he splashed and it was just on first light. And I think I think I made a mess of my shorts.
They hit hard. So when we left you last week, it was Cod 1, Cole 0.
That's right.
Have you redeemed yourself?
Well, I have, mate. It was later on the next day. And I was using a great big plastic, giant plastic, was hurting my shoulders. And I said to my mate, that was my mate Stewie's in the boat. I said, listen, this is the last cast for a while. I'm going to sit down because my shoulders are killing me. He goes, righto, mate. And you wouldn't believe it. It went bang, bang, and the rod buckled over. And I said, crikey, I'm on. Fighting this thing. And it came up. And I said, have a go at this thing. I said, I think I've got my next meter. And we put him up, put him on the lie detector. I can send you the photo. 109.
Wow, that's a trophy fish, and they're beautiful-looking fish out of that system. Were they all good fish?
Oh, mate, all good condition. There was no spots or bites on them, all fat fish. Stewie got a 99 a couple of days ago. I called it a meter because the girth on it was huge, and it felt like a ton to get it in, and we put it on the lie detector. It went to 99.8, so there you go. Just 0.02 shy of a meter.
Oh, poor bugger. That's a shame, isn't it? You give him a couple of centimetres. You could give him a couple of centimetres off your fish and all let go to fight another day?
Yeah, we don't keep, mate. We catch just for the thrill. They're too good to catch once. I think I've said that once or twice before now, mate.
And those big cod, what are the tips on handling them? Because we're told not to grab them by the mouth. I think the American bass fishing scene has been really bad for fish handling, you know, because they hold those largemouth bass by the mouth and it can...
They don't support the belly. That's the big thing. My advice, if it's a really extra large one and you can get out onto the bank and then get it up in the shallows and support the fish's belly as you lift it. If not, use a net if you can, where viable. I don't use lip grippers. I don't believe in lip grippers because I've seen the cod twist and it'll bust the jaw or bust the lip or bust the mouth. I use gloves. I do use gloves, and I've got heavy-duty gardening gloves. And what I do is when they come up, we net them, and we both get the net if it's a particularly big one like that one. We'll bring it in and place it on the deck. We'll have the brag mat ready to go. We sort it out. The deck's clean because whoever gets the fish, the other person clears the deck on the front of the boat where we're going to put it, get the brag mat in the water while just sitting there resting in the net nice and tranquil. Then we get it in, untangle it, get the hooks out of it, brag mat it, go, yoo-hoo, you beauty. A couple of quick photos, you put your gloves on, I always hold them in the mouth, and then when I lean over the side, I support the fish into the water, and then just let it go.
Can't wait to see the photos, mate. We'll put them up for our big fish listeners. We're talking to Cole, the Waymaster Trenorman, at Glen Lyon, the first time he's fished at Glen Lyon, and the Dares there have been looking after you. I hear Debbie even made you beautiful scones with jam and cream and everything.
Yeah, mate, we'll see. Funny little story. When we got here, we said, oh, we have to go and try these. And we've been putting it off and off and off. And now I know why we have been putting it off for so long, because they're so yummy. We'd have been up here every day eating scones with jam. But she has all these beautiful jams. Like I tried, what was it today? Ginger marmalade. And it was absolutely beautiful. And I had the Rosella, the original Rosella. Jam as well, and the cream is just fresh made.
That's good old Aussie stuff, isn't it? Rosella jam, that's hard to get these days. So a ginger marmalade, homemade ginger marmalade. Oh,
yes.
Sounds
beautiful,
fantastic.
The other boys threw their nose up, and I put a bit on. I put it on and put a bit of cream on it, and I said, "Crikey, mate, you got to try this." And they got. I had no jam left. I had to order another couple of scones too because there was a little bit of jam left over.
Brian and Debbie Dare run that family-owned park there that you're staying at. They're lovely people. Do so much work for fish conservation as well.
They and, do. 38 years they've been here, mate.
How long?
38 years they've been in this park.
Wow, that's terrific. And they've seen the fishery improve and improve. It's great to have custodians like that. You've had a few famous fishos drop in too, haven't you? Some of the people with those live scopes, you know, the fish finder that show you every speckle on the fish. You can see them swimming up to your lure and saying, "No, I don't think so," or "Yeah, I'll have that."
Yeah, well, we had Steve Morgan here for a day, him and his lovely wife. They were here. They're from the magazine. I think it's Fishing Monthly magazine that they used to run there. It's just not on print media, but now it's on the computer now. You can subscribe to that. There's Dean was supposed to turn up, but he's gone back. He'll be back here in a couple of days. But there was a young fella from Action Charters, and I think it was Hugh, his name was. He was here for a couple of charters, and now he's over to Mondi for 9 days. 9 days chartering at Munduran Dam for Barra. So who says Barra don't bite in winter?
Well, that forward-facing sonar that, as we've spoken of about a lot, it's a bit of a game changer, isn't it? Because if you can target the huge fish that's sitting still, you can taunt it into biting, I think, can't you?
Well, you always know the new people that are at it because they'll sit there and they'll be on one fish just casting at it, trying to get it, and they'll change lures and go back at it. And you sort of say, well, mate, they're not going to bite. Move on.
Yeah, right. So they're trying to target active, the odd one that's active.
Yeah, well, see, I talk to the boys that have scopes because if you get to know them, and they have a lot of information that you need. Like, okay, so your fish, where are they? He said, we found out at certain times of the evening or morning, the fish, the ones that were active, were up in that top 6 feet of the water.
Right, so you wouldn't be using a deep diver then?
No. Well, see, that's the thing. So if you're using, you got plastics, you throw them out and just start winding straight away. Because they're in that top 6 feet, it might be in 10 metres of water, but they're feeding in that top 2 metres, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, gotcha. We're at Glen Lyon Dam with Trenno, who's had a terrific trip with his mates from the mid-north coast and caught a few metre-plus cod. Well, Cole has. Cole, you mentioned one of the drawbacks of this sort of fishing is that in wintertime you can use lures that are the size of a python. You know, they're some of those massive lures. And I've spoken to other fishers who've wrecked their shoulders. I think Starlo might have been one of them, you know, because it's such addictive fishing to get that big surface bite on one of those big articulated lures. But they're so heavy and you're throwing so hard, you know, to cover the ground that you can wreck yourself. That's interesting. You've got the meter plus fish on the last cast because your shoulders were starting to give out.
And it was after about three, because I decided that instead of throwing smaller plastics, and I was throwing surface as well, but smaller surface, and I didn't bring me really big surface. Next time I'm up here, I will bring it because I reckon that'll be the one that'll get them. I started throwing 9-inch and 11-inch plastics around, 9 and 10 and 11-inch plastics around, and of course, they're a little bit weighty, and you've got to have a bigger, heavier rod and heavier line to really cast these things and you don't snap them off. And after about an hour and a half of casting and retrieving and casting, it does get to you. And my shoulders were starting to give me a bit of, because I'm not any younger, and I said, like they said to me, mate, I'm just going to sit down for about 10 or 15 minutes to give it a rest, and whack, and I went, guess I might be doing that.
The literal last cast. And look, think about that for the youngsters listening who go in centimetres, that's nearly 30 centimetres. Look in your lure box and see how many lures you've got that are 30 centimetres. I mean, that's a big bit of kit, isn't it? What do they take it as, do you think, Cole? Is it just another fish to scoff down, or is it a reaction bite or a anger bite? What do you think?
Well, I don't know. I don't get to watch the scapes. Like, I know a lot of the blokes are using these flies now. They use them on barramundi and they use them on cod as well. And
you said you were going to try one of those, didn't you, last time we spoke?
I didn't bring the right gear for it. I tried it on my overheads, on my overhead rods, and the stuff I got's too heavy for it. I got to step back down. I got to bring. I think I've got to bring my barra set up. I've got a 5,000 reel there on a. I think it's a 10 to 15 kilo rod, and I think it'd suit that a bit more because it'll cast it a lot easier. And I think, so I'll just, that's what I need to bring with me to actually use those things.
And how many fish all up caught and released with your crew? How many of you were there? And you've been there for, gosh, well over a week, haven't you?
Yeah, no, we've been here for about 8 days, mate. So it's been a bit of a journey. Like we said, we've never been here before. I think our crew, I think we had 18 fish for both boats caught and released. Best was 108. There was a 99 was the next best, and there were a few in the 70s, like 72, 74, 78, and then a couple of 60s, some 50s, and one solitary little 40.
And, Cole, what do you get from the crew for your winning score of 108?
Nothing.
just the praise of everybody saying you're the best.
No. Nothing like that, mate. No, they put you up on a pedestal here, mate.
You put it down to luck or skill?
Look, I knew where we were fishing along this bank because I've seen it the couple of mornings prior, and I said to me, mate, Stewie, I said, look, there's been wind on this for 2 days now. And I said, and there's pelicans sitting there for some reason. The pelicans are sitting there for a reason. But the whole place, this whole place is full of bait. I watched, it'd be 6 acres of water, and it was just bony brim and yellows and whatever was just going off. This dam is probably that rich with bait. It's not funny. But I said to me, mate, I said, look, this has been pushing those bait in on those weed beds along the low-lying bank, so we might as well fish, don't we? Come up, we renamed it. It was renamed, it was called Collie's Cove, and now it's called Gully 108. Oh, 109. There you go. So we've been working, and I said, look, we'll just work along this, and it was the first time we ran along it. I got up towards the end. Stewie missed a fish, and I missed another fish that just, like, hitting it, and then, like I said, we're up there on the northern end of that run, and we just go along nice and gently. If we can get away with it, we sort of drift with the wind and fish the places we can with the wind and just move in and out as we need to. Because we found that sometimes with the electric not on, you do a lot better. We found that between 3 and 5 metres was the best place to fish, sort of fish along and throw either forward or back into the bank with that, especially on the steeper banks. And that's what we found. And it's just trial and error, like 8 days, mate. You get to learn a bit.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people, you know, will stop in travelling through and have an afternoon on a fishery or something and say, oh, well, that's no good. But you guys give it a red-hot go, don't you?
Well, once a year, mate, we made a pact there a couple of years ago that once a year we went to Eildon last year, and I forget where we went the year before, but yeah. So we're talking about the other night around the fireplace with a couple of sherbets, and we just threw ideas in, and we're just all going to look into it for next year. So
I suggested Wyangla.
Yeah, we did. We looked at that, and that's only 2 hours from my mate Fat's place, so we could go there the day before and then head down. And that's not a bad fish. Wyangla's got some of the biggest yellow belly in.
Yeah, we were talking to Kenny Smith from the dam a couple of weeks back on the Big Fish, and they had a wonderful time. They got some lovely yellows and some lovely cod. I don't know if it's got as many big cod as that place, but there are many bigger cod too. I was just looking at the Victorian Fisheries Authority official site, and they reckon the longest and largest Murray cod ever officially recorded was 1.8 metres. That's nearly 6 feet in length. And weighed an astonishing 113.6 kilos or 250 pounds, caught in 1902 in the Barwon River in western New South Wales. Now, that's according to VFA, so you've got to say that they're reasonably reliable, but that's extraordinary, isn't it? When do you think we'll see fish over a metre and a half, or are we already seeing lots of fish over a metre and a half? Because now the metre used to be the magic mark, but now so much good stocking's happened and so much wonderful conservation work's been done that surely we're going to have to see a fish get up to that proportion.
Well, I think the new mark now is 120 to 130. If you can score a cod around that between 120, 130 or 130 plus, especially in the dams, you've done well. That's an achievement. I think from memory there was a recording about Copeton Dam was a fish of around that same size, 1.6, 1.8, I believe. And I just can't remember the poundage of it, but they reckon it was a massive fish. And this is before they brought the size limits in.
Well, they can potentially live up to 75 years or even more. So 75 to 100 years, they're saying, you know, that they regularly live 30 to 50. So who knows? Who knows what the limit is? But these impoundments, this dam fishing that you guys get into, it's a new world, isn't it? It's created a fantastic fishery for our inland listeners, and it's drawing people like yourself who've got the best saltwater and estuary fishing at your doorstep over the mountains.
Once it gets chilly, mate, I just think about over the west. But I was talking to Deb there the day we left, or the day before we left, and she told me the figures for the month. Month of June, and there was 57 fish over a metre caught in the month of June.
And it's not the biggest impoundment, is it? I mean, it's long and deep.
It's long. It's probably twice the size of Pindari. It's about a quarter of the size of, to give you some reference, it's about a quarter of the size of Copeton. But this fishery up here, mate, the Friday, Saturday, there would have been 30 to 35 or 40 boats in that dam, and everybody, all bar a couple, caught fish.
Wow. Well, it shows that they're taking well to catch and release, or the dam would have all these dead fish floating on it, surely.
Well, that's right. Yeah. But, the weather up there was absolutely, we had one, you call cold mornings. Okay. So, but the thing is, I'm not wearing any thermals, so I just got me. I've got a singlet, flannel. I got me sloppy Joe on, and a big coat. My big coat that I take with me, tracky dacks, and a pair of boots.
Well, you've lost a bit of weight too, so that shows it's been pretty mild.
Yeah. So, but in saying that, it's not. There. When was it? What day was it? Monday. We had 23 degrees on the dam, and that was. And we were standing there, and we're peeling clothes, like, you know, getting back down to your shorts and your flannel and that, and that was at 9 o'clock in the morning. And I asked Brian there, I said, look, what's August like? And he said, oh, just the same as this. If not, a tad warmer. Oh, crikey.
And you found it a very easy place to fish by the sound of it. Easy to, I mean, that's a pain if you've got muddy areas to launch and, you know, there's crowds and it's hard. It sounds like a pretty easy place to get in and out as well.
It's just like most other dams, mate. Full moon is probably the best one to fish, but I wanted to try the full moon here. I want to try the dark moon. But according to Debbie's figures, there was a lot more fish on the lead-up to the full moon than on the lead-up to the dark.
Yeah, we've got the big full moon at the moment, haven't we?
Yeah, well, yeah, that's right. When was it? No, we just passed it now. I think it was Wednesday or Tuesday night, I think it was.
Yeah, I saw it and I took the dog for a walk on Wednesday morning. It was nice and full and the tide was way out in my local estuary. Cole, it sounds like Glen Lyon is a place worth thinking about if you want to catch the magical meter-long cod. It's every fisher person's dream, I think, mate.
It is, mate. But just beware, like, don't come up here on my side here say so that, mate, look, this is a good dam to fish, and I will be back to fish it. I've busted me meter here, so, you know, I'll come back and see if I can get some more. But you got to take the dam on its own meter. Not all dams are the same. Copeton fish is different to this place. Eildon fish is different. Barrenjoke, Barrandong, Wyangler, the whole lot, they all fish different and different ways and different bits and bobs that go with it. So if you come up here with a general thing, Deb and Brian Dare, they've got a good idea about what fishing is. Make a friend up here with a bloke with a scope and they might be able to help you on which way. Like I said, a lot of the time, dead set. Blokes with the scopes, not all of them, and if they're going home, they're pretty easy with information. If they're here, their lips are tight.
They've got those eyes under the water. Oh, well, it's a new world, but you did all right. Your crew got, what you say, tangled with about
18 fish, mate,
18
for the
fish
week. Yeah.
Without that very expensive live scope sonar technology, so you've done all right. Hey, Cole, well done, mate. We had to get back to you because last week on the Big Fish, you were still on your duck, but at one point, 1 meter 8 centimeter Murray cod is a good fish in anyone's calculation.
Yeah, mate. I think I ended up with about 5 or 6 for the week. So my mate Stewie was about the same or a little bit better, and the other two boys made up the rest.
Yeah, well, there you go. That's not as if you're catching them every cast. You've got to work pretty darn hard, but well done, mate. And this is one of the few fishing shows where we're totally honest. If you'd stayed fishless like you were last Saturday, we would have told them, and you would have copped it from all the listeners.
I've had a couple of trips like that. It just happened. Well, I think I spoke to you about one from out of Copeton, absolutely done at it.
Yeah, that's right. And then they went into the tackle shop in Port Macquarie and gave it to the expert. But yeah. You've got big shoulders, mate, although they're pretty sore after throwing those 30 centimetre lures for metre plus Murray cod in Glen Lyon. Tight lines, mate.
No worries, champion. Thanks, buddy.
Cole, the Waymaster Trenorman on Glen Lyon.
The Big Fish with Scott Levi on ABC Radio.
Coming up, Stinker with more on his remarkable rescue and some of the lessons we can learn. And Kendall Kramer and the all-woman team at the Baronats on the mighty Daly River, dodging crocs and snags and catching a few as well.
Thank you. come Stinker with his fishing tips. Some hot advice for your fishing trip. Where to find him? What's the bait?
Are you catching any, mate?
Good morning, Stinker.
Hey, g'day, Scott.
Great to talk to you again. Gee, we're getting some lovely emails. One thing that's come out of your ordeal is that people are really thinking boating safety, and you've been on the front foot with that as well. This one from Chris, who said, if it can happen to the old man of the sea, it can happen to anyone. And, you know, had a good think about his own boating safety. And really, people thinking about boating safety and doing everything they can to minimise the risk is a good thing, but there's always a risk.
Oh, most certainly. I mean, I've been going out there in the same spot for over 40 years in the same boat. I've had some very, very dodgy experiences over that period. I've always got home on time. I would never consider myself a responsible fisherman, because it's hard to teach old sea dogs new tricks. However, having said that, I have really got to reanalyze the situation and know what mistakes. I know what. I don't need anyone to tell me what mistakes I've made. I know. You don't go fishing out there for 40 or 50 years and not know, you know, what you're coming short of. But I want everybody else to know, from my experience, I hope they can learn. Firstly, number one, tell somebody, anybody, when you're going to be home. You can also tell here in Port Stephens, Marine Rescue. Now, they're very good. They're very, very vigilant, and it's a 24-hour-a-day voluntary service. And now, I didn't do that. And again, that's, like I say, I'm not totally responsible. I have a few ticks, but a lot of crosses. Anyway, so that's number one. Tell somebody what time you're going to be home. Number two is wear a life jacket, and a good one. Not like my tatty old thing. I think the rats had chewed half the end of it off. I mean, and I've had it for over 20-odd years. And I put it on, and the buckles, they're all broken and bent and twisted. And so really, I wasn't prepared for what eventuated.
Well, it's just such a learning curve for everyone. And first and foremost, you're with us to tell the tale. That's the main thing. What about poor old Stinkpot, Stinker? Everyone's worried about your beautiful boat with eyes.
Well, it's off to the scrap metal, unfortunately. I haven't broken the news to him yet. He's down there in the boat shed, and it is just a scrunched up aluminium. Never float again. So sad, because as I've mentioned, it's become part of the family. But see, there's two stink pots. The first stink pot I bought 40 or 45 years ago, I used it so often that it actually split, the hull split. And I could have welded it, aluminium weld and all that sort of stuff. But my wife on the side of the road saw, unbelievably, an identical, which is a savage gull. That's what Stinkpot is, a savage, 11-foot savage gull. Anyway, I said, oh, well, you know, I can retire the old one, and this is the new one. So this is actually Stinkpot 2, and it got a face and a big smile on it too, because the kids on Fingal Beach love that sort of thing. Now, Stinkpot 2, which is the boat that went down last week, that's off to the scrap metal heap. So I'm now on the lookout for Stinkpot 3. and then we'll see if I find something suitable. I'll reassess the situation. But I don't think I can live in Fingal Bay without having a boat. It just, you know, that's only half living your life, really.
And Stinker, what about the brand new motor? You had all those trials and tribulations with the old motor. You traded it in for a brand spanking new one that started first pull every time. What happened to that?
It's out there in the water somewhere.
it's on the bottom of the sea.
Broke off. Yeah, it broke off the back. If you could see the condition that Stinkbot's in, you could understand why I never swum near the rocks, because there was a 2.5 metre sea and it was really crunching the rocks, really. And I went close and I had a look over the edge and I thought, I'm not going down there. But 400 metres to the south of where I where my incident occurred, that's where they found Stinkbot. And I got one oar washed up onto the beach, and someone come around to my home and said, here's one oar.
Oh,
well,
wow.
the other one snapped in two. So it's only a half oar. I only got half it anyway. But so all my friends around Fingal with their, what do you call those things that fly around?
Drones.
Drones. They checked the place out with drones and also went out in their boat and found it way up in a crevice, way up in about 75 metres up in a crevice. And another friend who's got a salvage business here, he went and got it. And swam ashore, tied a rope onto it, towed it out into the water, and then 2 days ago, I sort of lost a track of time, to tell you the truth. A couple of days ago, he brought it into Nelson Bay, and I was waiting at Little Beach Boat Ramp, and he had a winch, and he lifted it up, and I thought, oh, my God. But he had a real black eye, poor old Stinkbot. It was just bashed to unrecognisable, really.
Yeah, it shows the power of the sea. And to be 75 metres up high and dry on the rocks, you did the right thing to stay out of the white water with a 2 metre pounding swell. We're speaking to Stinker post the rescue, and also this week in the local papers and on the telly, wonderful story meeting up with the rescuers who dragged you out of the water semi-conscious, very close to death through hypothermia, and that's not exaggerating, is it?
Oh, not at all. My body temperature was 25 degrees, which anyone with any medical knowledge at all will tell you that survival at body temperature 25 is very rare. But yes, I did have a... I mean, I am so thankful, so really thankful. And I told the rescue helicopter that if anything I could ever do to repay what they did for me, and they said, well, come to Belmont, which is just north of Newcastle. They said, come to Belmont and meet all those involved. So my wife and I, we jumped in the car at Fingal Bay and off we went to Belmont, and we went through all the Pelican Airdrome there in Newcastle, and then we got there. I thought, oh, gee, I said to Ella, look at all the people here. They must be having some sort of function. And when I got out, they were all there as part, they'd played some part in my rescue. Some played an active part, some just made a simple phone call. But without that simple phone call, mate, I was goner.
Well, that's quite extraordinary, John, to meet that wonderful, those wonderful first responders, and the kid you taught at school who dragged you out of the water. I just looked up Corb body temperature 25 degrees Celsius, which you had on one of the health sites. Severe life threatening hypothermia. Normal human body temperature is around 37 degrees C. Any core temperature below 35 is a critical medical emergency. At 25, the brain and body cannot function. The person will likely be unconscious, in a coma, or have stopped shivering and may appear deceased. And that's exactly what the young fellow who pulled you out, the young police sergeant who you taught at school, said.
Yep, that's how it was. I have a memory. I do have memory of being pulled on board the ship, on board the boat, but not much. I don't remember recognising anybody or speaking to anybody. But my last real conscious, the last thing I saw that was of greatest when I was sort of conscious was the helicopter light coming along the coastline. And I thought, oh, my dear, You know, that's what I'd been waiting for. I was in the dark for about 3.5 hours. And for those I was in there for 5 hours in the drink. But in the dark, and you can't see anything, but all I wanted to see was that helicopter light. And when I saw it coming and I heard the noise, I thought, you beauty, I'm in for a chance here.
It must be lovely for those people. What a job, you know, to make such a difference. I mean, you couldn't make a better contribution to humanity than saving someone's life.
Oh, most definitely. And the young lady that found me with a spotlight, Hannah, and they call her Hawkeye Hannah, and I met, and she was as happy to meet me as and I was as happy to meet her. And we had the biggest cuddle, and oh, gee, it was, she had a big smile on her face, and I'm so thankful. But she was just hanging out of the, she was a, emergency doctor, a very highly qualified kid, really. And I thought, wow, special. And she spotted me. I had a bit of seaweed and all that sort of stuff on me. So, you know, it was, but so her, you know, all this week, the past week has been me telling my story. And I'm happy to do that. Because the best way, if I can bring anything positive out of this mess, is to tell other people what to do or what to consider, and be more responsible than me.
And Stinker, finally, you've got some great correspondence as well. It was lovely. I believe that the Kelly family got in touch with you.
Oh, gee. People, I've been on the radio doing fishing reports and boating and Port Stephens, you know, for over 40 years. And I started off on a commercial radio station in Sydney with Noel Kelly. Oh, good. And I used to play rugby league, and he's an icon of the game and has been considered one of the greatest players ever to play. And I was introduced to Noel 2 years after a segment called Ned and Stinker. Ned and Stinker was on this program, and a lot of people used to listen to it. But I had never met him. But I knew who he was. He never knew me. He didn't know who I was. But I knew who he was. Anyway, we finally got to meet, and we formed a really strong friendship with his family and my family. And even since Ned has passed, we still keep in contact. And I was contacted by the Kelly family. Oh, and I thought, how good was that? Because when we used to do the old program years and years ago, and there'll be people listening today who listen to that, I was in bed in Fingal and he was in bed at Collaroy, or, you know, and we both play up on Friday night. So, you know, we get home at sort of irregular time. And it was a live program. It was, and there was no beeper. And, oh, it was wild radio, but people loved it. And that's how it all started.
Oh, mate, you're an absolute treasure. Great that you're back with us. And, look, tight lines, buddy. We'll get back into the water pretty soon, I reckon. Catch you next time, Stinker.
Hooray, Scott.
The Big Fish with Scott Levi on ABC Radio.
It's the Big Fish, and even though we're embedded in the depths of winter, our fishos have been travelling to find the fish, and Kendall Kramer's had a couple of great adventures. She's been off to the Barra Nats up in the Northern Territory, and on the way back, fished a couple of the dams in Queensland where the bass are mega-sized for the Bass Electric tournament that she's been telling us about. Morning, Kendall.
Morning, how are you?
Yes, you've been travelling a bit. How did the Barra Nats go?
Oh, travelling, haven't I what? I feel like I've spent more time in a swagon in my car in the last month or 6 weeks than I have at home. But, you know, that's the way we live. Barra Nats, we travelled up to Darwin. So we towed our own boat from Destiny Marine, Olivia, one of my friends in the Gold Coast. We took her boat and travelled up to Darwin. Took us 4 days to get there, or not quite to Darwin, to Benyon Farm Tourist Park, which is where we hold Barra Nats out of every year. and competed in Baronuts. There was two teams. We had my team, which we called ourselves Destiny Marine WRFL, and then we had the Northern Territory WRFL, which was skippered by Emma Harvey, who lives up there. So we had two all-female teams in Baronuts, and we're all camped together and making plans together and sticking together and all that kind of stuff. So we had a really good time, and we did catch some nice fish. We didn't catch the biggest one, but, you know, that's all right. We caught lots of beautiful fish, and they were really fat this year, like really healthy, which is probably to be expected with the massive flood and runoff season that they've had up there this year.
Oh, that's so, good news. So they've had had a good season, eh?
Absolutely. I mean, yes and no. So the locals have suffered pretty hard with some hectic floods. So, you know, our neighbours here in Lismore can sympathise with how that feels. And it's been one of the biggest floods that they've had in a very, very long time. They are usually set up and ready for floods every single year because it does happen. And obviously they have massive tides up there that backs up the runoff. However, it was a larger than usual season with the flood waters, and they had, you know, the cyclone and a lot of rain come through, and lots of communities went under, and there's still a lot of roads that have collapsed. There was only one boat ramp that only just got dug out sort of the week before we got to the farm to start our comp, and about halfway through our comp, they opened another ramp, so we had two. And they were still doing lots of work on the communities around to try and get people back into their well, I want to say homes, but some of their homes were not livable anymore. So a lot of inundation and a lot of devastation happening up there. But the competition was to go ahead and, you know, on the precedent that we be careful with the river and treat it with respect. And some people came undone with a lot of things in the river, which was very scary and unfortunate, but everybody did end up coming out of that okay.
Yeah, you don't want to end up in the water like poor old Stinker in that waterway for 5 hours. You wouldn't last for 5 minutes. You'd be a snack. I'm worried about you in a swag. I hope you weren't on the banks of the Daly River in your swag. The crocodiles call that a sausage roll, don't they?
No. That sounds about right. Yeah, hell no, I'm not that silly. No, we were staying, I guess you could kind of say we were on the bank, but up in the tourist park where we were staying, we're very far away from the bank, and all the other times that I was staying in my swag was on the road. So, but we did actually have a really, really great setup that we were all staying in, which was this massive big blow-up sort of tent where you just plug in a pump, which was donated to the Women's Recreational Fishing League as one of our tents that it's going to stay up there in the Northern Territory with Emma so that she can use it with all of the different things that happen in there, like Secret Women's Business and the Corroboree Park Challenge and Baronuts and stuff like that. So it's a beautiful tent. You just shove the pump in it and it's 6 by 4 meters. It's massive inside and it takes 5 minutes to blow up and blow down with the pump. It's incredible. So we were nice and safe inside of that, away from the crocodilians.
That is the first time a blow-up tent's ever been mentioned on the Big Fish. So yeah. What are the advantages of that? Hopefully it's mozzie proof. I don't know if it'll be crocodile proof, but
it is mozzie proof, yes. I guess if you had to contend with a crocodile, it's probably not going to stand the test of time, but it's made out of like rubber ducky material, so it's quite hardy.
Oh, that's heavy duty, isn't it?
Yeah, it's epic. It weighs 100 kilos and it's quite large even when it's blown down. So it's a little bit bulky, but for something like that, it's incredible, and it's actually rated for quite cold temperatures. So when you're in the snow and things like that, it's actually supposed to be quite insulated.
You don't have the deflating experience as the air collapses.
No. And you know, if something gets a little bit soft, you can just throw the pump back in there and pump it up a little bit further.
What I like about it too is if you have a couple of sherbets around the fire, or I know it's quite a social event, that one, when you if you fall through the door, you're just going to bounce like the bouncy castle.
Well, there's no bounciness on the floor, just the frame on the inside, but if you bounce off the side pillar, you'd be all right.
Were you bouncing off the walls, Kendall Kramer? I bet you played up.
I'm always bouncing off the walls, mate, but no, I was very well behaved.
Gee, did you have a great fun time? I mean, obviously the fishing is spectacular. You know, the Daly River, the huge crocodiles and the giant snags and the massive tidal run and all the other wild animals. It really is a beautiful part of the world. But what about after that, you know, around the camp?
Oh, look, I absolutely love Barra Nationals, and this is my third year that I've been. As soon as you get out of the car when you enter the tourist park up there, it's like you've found, you know, like you've been reunited with your family. You find so many friends and stuff up there, and everybody's willing to lend a hand. Like, you know, we had a couple of emergencies on the water, for instance, and a couple of boats were sinking after damage to their boats, and another man had a medical episode, and everybody just jumps in because we all care about each other. Like, the fishing is what we go there for the comp. But at the end of the day, like, the fishing comes last when one of your mates is in trouble.
Yeah, so, and did, you know, the snags move a lot? I mean, obviously that massive volume of water coming down, that's huge. Did it really create some danger with new snags and things?
Absolutely. The tracks that we had last year were completely useless to us this year. There's a whole new...
So you're talking about tracks on your sound, on your GPS plotter?
Yeah. So every year we go down the river and like go really slow just so that we can see where all of the new snags are, because every single year there's more trees that have fallen into the water, there's trees that have moved, there's other bits and pieces that have ended up in the wrong spots, like pontoons and stuff like that. So it's really important for your safety to go down and create a track on your sounder to follow. But the unfortunate thing is we're always in between, you know, the neeps and everything, so we can't really predict exactly where everything is, because the river's dropping every single day with the runoff, and also the tide's getting lower and lower each day. So every single day, more and more snags keep popping out. There's trees that you didn't even know were there the day before, and you wouldn't have seen them because the water was just higher. And every single day it gets more and more dangerous as you're going down the river, and the tide keeps dropping and the water keeps dropping with the runoff. So it's so important to just have your wits about you. And you know, the people that damaged their boats have been driving down that river at full speed for the last 30 years, every single week, and they know that river better than anybody else. And they still did damage to their boats and come off second best in that respect. So it's one of those things where it doesn't matter how much experience you have with the river, you can still come unstuck. It's just such a beast of a river, and nobody is safe at the end of the day. It's one of the most dangerous rivers in Australia.
So you were driving, which is a really important job to hold the boat in place with the electric and pick those spots. I mean, it's more about the skipper. And that's the thing about women doing it for themselves, because the skipper plays a huge part.
Yeah, look, I've been there, as I said, that was my third year fishing Barranut, and I've really started to figure out exactly how that river works. And Emma, she obviously lives up there, so she's had a lot of experience on that river as well. And aside from the dangers and the changes and everything in the river all the time, we are getting really good at being able to pinpoint where the fish are going to sit and where they're going to come out at different times of the tide, different times of the day, and looking at the bite times and all that kind of thing, and really coming out with a plan. And, you know, we do have other teams in the competition that we're all friendly with, and we do share information and stuff like that with what we found with, you know, different days of fishing. And every year is different. You can't rely on what happened last year to make your plan, but it definitely does help. And we are really getting to the point where we feel like we're actually starting to become quite competitive in this space. And, you know, we didn't win, but we did come sort of halfway through the field this year, which was a bit of an upgrade from last year, which is for me, because it was my second time being skipper. My first year I didn't skipper. So it just shows me that we are starting to figure it out, and we are making some inroads in there. So that's positive, and it does show that the other women on the boat, that, you know, and other women watching us, that you don't need men to explain how to do things. You can figure it out for yourself, and that's what we're trying to do.
Kendall Kramer on the Daly River for the Barranats with the Women's Recreational Fishing League, driving the boat and catching some good fish. We'll catch up with Kendall next week and find out all about that, and also some great adventures on the Bass Electric Tour too, catching some stonking bass up around 50 centimetres. That's next week on The Big Fish.
Get out of it, bloody seagulls.